Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Hey, it's Ryan. Welcome to another episode of the Best of the Day Show here. The women's national team lost to Sweden in the round of 16. Here from Megan Rapinoe. And a bunch of more players on the loss. On top of that, we have your best audio in soundcheck, including Jody Mack. He had trouble pronouncing Gundy, my man, his name. On top of that, Boyle and Bogish got into a debate over the Pac-12 and conferences and rivalries. Hear that. And Pat Boyle stunned to a news featuring a female named Hank. On top of that, analytics and your epic fail here on the Best of the DA Show. Let's go.
As I sit here right now, if it was not monsooning in New York, there would be World Cup soccer on our TV screens in the studio. Instead, there is the please come back soon DirecTV message. We have no satellite system. But as that tourney continues down under, it does not have Team USA in it. Maybe that's how you woke up yesterday. It is definitely where we begin today. It's your cold open.
Lena Hurtig, who has hurt the U.S. before in one of play, has a chance to put them out of the World Cup. If she scores, Sweden wins, the U.S. is out. If not, another round. Hurtig! Off there! Did it go in? Waiting on a signal. Wow. Sweden wins.
Sometimes you learn the most from your failures, which sucks, but it's part of my career as well. And yeah, unfortunately, this is my last time in this crest, so I'm excited for them in the future.
Yeah, it's a tough one, and there's just some dark comedy in me missing a penalty in my last game ever. So, I mean, that's a sick joke. That's just like, yeah.
I don't believe it!
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heartrending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes.
It's your cold open.
In reverse order, you just heard Megan Rapinoe, Julie Ertz, and then JP De La Camera on Fox calling that remarkable end to U.S.-Sweden, I guess 23, 22 hours ago. I woke up as the second half was ending, extra time begins, and then the PKs, and it was a lot to go through to process before 8 a.m. on a Sunday morning. This has been a controversial, a disappointing, a confusing World Cup for Team USA, but they seem to have figured things out against Sweden, except for the scoring part. They played their best match of this event, as you know by now. Could have won multiple times in regulation, maybe a time or two in that extra time, but the Swedish goaltender Musovic just kept turning them away. And then PKs, they get the two misses, one miss, one save. They've got multiple chances to put it this way and move on. Three missed PKs then from the USA. Finally, Sweden converts. An all-time review. I mean, just remarkable across the board that Alyssa Nair touched it to begin with, then almost knocked it off the goal line. And that review, as delayed as it was, being shown to us. And I couldn't figure out if Fox controls all of that or if the world feed controls all of that. Who actually gets blamed for the slow showing of the replay? But we finally got that graphic from the VAR of that soccer ball by, I don't know, millimeters, tenths of millimeters, just over the goal line, making it good, making Sweden win, and sending U.S. soccer back home out of the round of 16, their earliest exit ever in this event, going for a three-peat. They had only ever reached at least the semifinals, and here they are, two rounds shy of that, being knocked out. A deserved result based on their group stage play, but not on the way they played yesterday against Sweden. And as they move forward, there's a lot of things to figure out, a lot of things to digest here. most assume there's going to be a head coaching change. Vlatko Andonovski has overseen this program for a couple of years, and this is not the first disappointment. The last Olympics did not go well. In fact, I think they've only won 4 of the last 10 major tourneys they've been in, not all under him. Now, that's a pretty nice winning percentage, but it's not what the U.S. women's soccer program is used to. There are a lot of issues. I still know almost nothing about soccer, but I knew not to go back to Megan Rapinoe yesterday after the way she played in the previous round, and that was the second sub they made, and it did not go well. At 3 or 4 corner kicks that were never dangerous. And then, of course, the missed PK, and you heard Rapinoe discussing that at the end of your cold open. But as we move forward here, and even U.S. Soccer put the statement out yesterday that, you know, it's great that the rest of the world is now here and this event moves on, and that there's more competition and a deeper pool of teams and players. And that's my concern here this morning, because during group stage, watching those matches, it felt a lot like watching U.S. men's soccer, where they couldn't generate chances, or if they did, they couldn't convert them. They were struggling to beat lesser opponents or inferior opponents, or couldn't pull off the upset and get the job done. And now I'm back in that same area where I'm wondering if, because the rest of the world has caught up, the U.S. women's kind of head start has now vanished, and now the overall U.S. American soccer kind of infrastructure, from, you know, from being 8 years old all the way through feeding into the national team, if the shortcomings of that system, which have hamstrung the men's side, is now the problem on the women's side. And I know that there were injuries, significant players. Macario wasn't there. Mallory Pugh-Swanson wasn't there. This Becky Sauerbrunn defensively. This was not the best U.S. women's soccer team they could have put out there. But they still should have been better in the group stage, had an easier round of 16 match. They should have flipped with the Netherlands, should have been playing South Africa, not Sweden, the number 3 team in the world. And it got to burn them yesterday. And they're in a place where they're going to have significant changes moving forward. Personnel-wise, Julie Ertz crying. She's likely done. Alex Morgan said post-match yesterday she hasn't decided anything yet, but she probably, at the very least, is not going to be one of the lead names, lead players 4 years from now. So there's a lot of young talent, a lot of underused talent, some other players who are not healthy right now who will circle their way back into this mix. It'll be a much different team moving forward, and probably with different leadership, and it's deservedly so, because this just flat out did not go well, did not go as expected, and did not figure things out fast enough, earlier enough, to avoid this really embarrassing result. And that's exactly what it is. And by the way, you can call this embarrassing, you can call this disappointing, you can call this not good enough. You can be plenty negative about this performance, because they've put themselves, with their previous success, they've set the highest of standards. And when they don't meet them, we absolutely should call them out on it. And we should explore why they didn't get there and what needs to be changed. Who needs to be changed? Whether it's the support staff, the technical staff, or it's the top guy in Andonovski, or it's everybody. Those are all valid questions, fair questions, and we'll get answers on them sometime soon. You can say all of those things without knocking this team. And I understand that they say things and they do things that you might not necessarily agree with, but that doesn't mean that they shouldn't have your support, especially when a lot of your argument is about patriotism, and now here you are celebrating a U.S. team losing a major sporting event. You don't like them complaining or talking or debating or fighting for the things that they think are wrong. But now you're sitting here celebrating, enjoying their defeat because you don't like certain things and you don't agree with certain things. At the very least, that makes you a hypocrite. It might make you worse things. Even the stupid chippy jokes about, oh, too many commercials, not enough goals. I don't understand those tweets, which were the first ones I saw yesterday when this match was over. When you write that, when you say that, are you saying that there were too many photo shoots, they weren't practicing soccer enough, and that's why Alex Morgan's header was saved yesterday on a diving play by the goalie? Like, that's her fault? There's so much ridiculous back and forth contradictory behavior, being hypocritical. It doesn't make any sense to me, and we should just be better, and we can be critical of them, and they deserve it. And there are questions, valid questions to ask, tough questions that deserve tough, thoughtful, answers from them. But the petty stuff should be beneath us. It's not. I wish it was. I'm not surprised that it isn't. But we should kind of work to be a little bit better by that. And we are efforting, by the way, a soccer guest. Our friends at The Athletic are trying to find somebody that maybe even will be awake down under. I believe now we've crossed into past 10 o'clock p.m. Monday night down there. So hopefully before we're done, we'll have somebody discuss all of this better than me and Boyle. But we will certainly, if not today, then tomorrow, tackle this big subject. There's a lot of things to unpack from yesterday. And also, too, for this tournament moving forward. And P.S., one more soccer note, Messi scored 2 more goals last night. I think that's 7 in 4 games. They've all been Leagues Cup games, and I think not an actual MLS game yet, but another MLS opponent last night. And Inter Miami was actually losing for a little bit, and Messi scored 2 goals, and then in PKs to help them advance. It's just remarkable.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
Soundcheck on this Monday morning begins on Saturday night. I guess SummerSlam was last night in Detroit, Pete?
Oh, it was Saturday.
It was Saturday. And there was a Paul brother fighting Nate Diaz Saturday night as well.
That's right.
The third fight Saturday was my favorite. This Guardians White Sox, Jose Ramirez against Tim Anderson.
And the diving Vaughn down the right field line, kicks into the corner. Ramirez on his way to second. Head first slide, safe and in to score is Jimenez. And another hustle double. Right over the bag at first. Now Jose and Anderson square off. They're fighting. They're swinging. Down goes Anderson. Down goes Anderson.
Tom Hamilton is the most famous baseball radio announcer right now because of this call. Down goes Anderson. Down goes Anderson.
Down goes Anderson.
It was, I think, 2 Mondays ago where it was me and Boyle, and it was E.J. Stewart, and we were talking about a Cubs-Cardinals, Miles Michaelis hit Ian Happ after Ian Happ hit Wilson Contreras with his backswing. And E.J. was very anti-violence. Me and Boyle were very pro-violence. I'm pro-violence again in this scenario. This is a heck of a fight. A lot of baseball fights are a lot of fake tough guys pushing and backing away and hold me back. This is a full-on fight. If you haven't seen this by now, I don't know what you've been doing for the last, 36, 48 hours. This video has been everywhere. It is Jose Ramirez sliding into second base through the legs of Tim Anderson. Anderson is in no rush to kind of step around Ramirez and give him freedom to get up. Ramirez says something from the ground, stands up, they push, they shove, and then they go, let's fight. And almost like in hockey style, Tim Anderson wiggles his glove off his left hand and puts up his dukes, and away they go. And then Ramirez catches him with a right hook in the left jaw, and down goes Anderson. Down goes Anderson. That was just the beginning. Then there was more pushing and scrambling. They dragged Anderson off the field once, and then I think the Cleveland third base coach almost fought the White Sox manager. And while that was going on, Anderson came back onto the field and was literally picked up and now carried off the field by one of his teammates. Again, I'm going to be pro-violence in that. If you're going to fight, fight. And those guys fought. And even Terry Francona after the game said, you don't want to enjoy this or make light of it. But he loved Hamilton's call. And everybody loved the fight, even though it involved the dude getting knocked out. What was the nastiest fight you were in as a player? Well, I'm assuming at least once you were in a benches clearing brawl.
Yeah, I was. And I'm trying to remember if that was college or if that was summer ball.
In the Northwoods League?
Yeah.
Well, or this week. 2 Thursdays ago. Didn't you always get into a fight in the Boomer Charity softball game?
Flag football game. It wasn't
right.
Really a fight. I kind of just lost my mind. I was bleep talking a bunch of 18-year-olds saying, I'm in, after I caught 2 touchdown passes.
That makes sense.
But that was about it. No, okay. I think that I think there was a benches clearing kerfuffle one time in one of my college games, but again, nothing. It doesn't come of anything. No, there was a summer league one where somebody hit somebody. He like walked towards the mound. We all immediately jump out of the dugout, you know, waiting for action, testosterone riddled. And we kind of all just like come together in a scrum. And I just remember one of the coaches from the other team who was like tattoo sleeve, like probably big hog in his lip, like forearms massive for no reason. And he kind of just got in the middle and he screamed at the top of his lungs, "Enough!" And we were just like, okay, yeah. Time to go back to the dugout.
Well, I can see you also getting into one of those secondary brawls that happens after the main kerfuffle.
Yeah, those are good. Where all of a sudden then the camera's like jerks over because something spills out on the edge of the brawl.
Bench player fighting with a coach.
No, I've never been in one of those.
Now, I'm sure you're all for this fight.
Oh, you love absolutely. This one. Need more fights in baseball. Need more fights. That was the best. That was the most exciting thing in baseball since Sosa versus McGuire.
But do we know why they started throwing punches?
So, not exactly. Ramirez said, you know, he's always been disrespecting the game for a long time now. So I still read it as he didn't like that he stood over him. But even though Ramirez slid in between his legs, rightfully so, Anderson was in regular position to take the throw.
Yeah, he didn't do anything out of the sorts.
I think maybe Ramirez wanted him to move faster so he could get up. He kind of just stayed there. But, yeah, I think Ramirez got unnecessarily upset to begin all this. Yes.
It was warming up the entire series. So there was an incident on Friday. I think a couple guys got ejected. And then earlier in the game, I think Tim Anderson was talking smack to one of the Guardians players on second base. The ump was like separating them. So it just reached the boiling point after Ramirez got to second and he said, "Let's fight." And he didn't back down.
And he's had some issues before with other players.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's not surprising from his end that he's in another scuffle.
Yeah.
You know, but this was just, you know, as Ryan was saying, maybe brewing, but...
But even the brewing part, like...
Right.
So Ramirez slides into second, and he's just ready to fight. Like, something has... In the moment, I think Anderson standing over him...
Said something.
Is what made him angry.
Or said something that we didn't see.
True. Yeah. And then Anderson was on Twitter yesterday, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 tweets in a row, almost presenting, like, a conspiracy theory. Like, I don't... Like, they're out to get me. And the last one was, like, the picture bigger instead of the bigger picture. And that's my new favorite thing, the picture bigger.
Maybe he has CTE or concussion.
Well, I mean, that is what some people were saying. Like, is he actually still okay? Because, I mean, he was still wobbly coming off the field. When they were the first time ushering him off, his legs still kind of buckled every once in a while. Like, he was pretty messed up. So, on a serious note, there could have been something wrong with him still yesterday. But it was just a lot of random stuff. Like, everyone's out to get me, and I'm keeping names, basically, and... Okay.
So, someone might want to take the phone away from him and let him take a little breather. And plus, another thing to add on top of the White Sox.
I mean, what a disaster. Awful. What a disaster.
I mean, Tony La Russa, yeah, that's one thing, but now it still continues. There's something majorly wrong in that organization. Might need to go to Ken Williams this time.
And you had the new Yankees reliever. Yes. What's his name? Wayne Middleton?
Kanan
Middleton.
Betcher, something like that.
You know, basically blowtorch them. I was going to do this in the update, but now since we're talking about it. Blowtorch them, said, yeah, there's a player who regularly falls asleep in the bullpen. Guys miss meetings all the time. The organization is a disaster.
I'm not right about a lot of things, but we were on the La Russa thing from the beginning. Uh-huh. And not that anybody else wasn't, but, I mean, that was never going to work. And they tried to make it work and had no chance. And then when they gave this Pedro Grifol the job, like, the baseball world loved it. You know, a lifer, it's about time. And he has not fixed anything. And Pete's right. Now you got to go over to the top and start from the whole thing.
Not Ken Anderson. Ken Williams.
You said Ken Williams.
I did?
Okay. I thought you did, yeah.
this comes back to Jerry Reinsdorf being that probably too. One of the worst owners in the last 20 years of professional sports.
Yeah. But it might be time to change it up there.
Let's move on to Saturday earlier before the fight in Cleveland. Elsewhere in Ohio, we had the Football Hall of Fame induction ceremonies. Joe Thomas was the last speaker of the day. And here is Joe during his Hall of Fame speech taking shots at his good buddy Steve Johnson.
To my best friends growing up, Steve Johnson, you always kept me humble. You beat me out my senior year of high school for the Offensive Lineman of the Year in the Greater Metro Conference. Thanks for never letting me forget that. I guess I was just a harder worker than you in college because you ended up being a long snapper, and I'm standing up here with the gold jacket. I'll let you buy me a beer later.
There's some heat in there, is there not?
He was there too.
I know. And like, I've heard this thing like three times, and I can't figure out if it's just a poorly delivered shot or like the, I guess I'm a harder worker than you is what keeps catching my ear.
It's all inside. That's all inside jokes right there.
Yeah.
It's all. Joe Thomas has been having this relationship with him for years, and it's probably just another couple jabs.
Yeah, and you know the long snapper jokes, as we know well, write themselves.
That's for some people in the audience.
It's that one caveat of, I guess I worked harder than you in college. I need to know what that backstory is, what that inside joke pertains to.
I think it's an inside shot at him. He probably didn't work as hard as the long snapper.
Yeah, maybe. Now, speaking of our favorite long snapper and his dad, I only saw a picture of Peter Schwartz with a Hall of Fame ring. I'm assuming that was Joe Klecko, but it was in a T-shirt, which I hope means Schwartz didn't go to a Klecko Hall of Fame party in a T-shirt.
I wouldn't put it past him.
I wouldn't, but he at least got himself near a Hall of Fame ring. But our quest on Friday was to see if he got himself into a Hall of Fame party. And I don't think he did, at least from what I saw on social media.
Yeah, the only parties I saw were the parties that Tiki attended to for Rondé. That's the only parties I saw.
I spent a strange amount of time seeing all those pictures and in the run-up to this, wondering in his heart of hearts how Tiki feels about all of this.
I'm sure he wants to be there.
No, of course. But like, can you go that entire weekend and not in any have any feelings about yourself and be like, I should be here, or I was good, or the Giants should love me more? Like,
no, not for him because of their relationship. Him and Rondé are so close.
Yeah.
It's not, I bet you if he thought about it, it was about maybe like a couple minutes, nothing major.
I also think it helps that they're twins.
Yes.
If Tiki was the older brother, because I think that's how I'm thinking of it, because my brother's younger than me, and if we had somehow both played professional anything, and I was as good as Tiki, even my brother had Rondé's career, and therefore he's going into Canton, I think every once in a while on that weekend, I don't even know what the right word is.
It's a natural thought
to be reminded of, like, right, maybe I could have done this or done that, or why isn't, like, no one's paying attention, not enough attention to me.
There's so many reminders. There's right. Busts in a Hall of Fame.
And it looks like you for Tiki. It's like, is that me? Is that who is that?
No, I think for Tiki's sake, I think there will be a push for Tiki now that Rondé's in. I think Rondé also, in his speech, kind of alluding to that Tiki should be there. I think there will be a push for Tiki, and Tiki should be there.
Two other things on this. I don't know if this picture was real or not, and I have to be honest, I did not watch the ceremony live Saturday, but I saw a picture of a barely, like, third full stadium as Joe Thomas was about to talk. I don't know if people ran out to get bathrooms and concessions in between speeches, but there's a picture from up above that showed almost nobody in that place preparing to listen to Joe Thomas.
It probably goes back to how hot it was.
Right, because it is during the day. They used to do it at night. Why? When did they change it?
I don't remember. It might have just been this year or last year, because in recent years, I remember seeing speeches at night.
Right, in the dark, thinking this is the way to do it. Get me out of the heat. Yeah, like the stupid baseball one.
Look, I think, as I've said on this show before, I think Pro Football Hall of Fame is the best of all the Hall of Fames. The process, the selection, what you get, the bus, all that. I think it's the best of all the Hall of Fames in terms of how they handle things. They need to find an indoor facility.
Well, especially they're only drawing 75 people.
Yeah.
You can get a VFW hall and call it a day. One other Hall of Fame note. I think you might know him too, Pete. Colin Cosell, the last name is obvious.
Yes.
He is one of the public address announcers at Citi Field and other places here in New York. I've known him from high school sporting event broadcasts. I've known him for years now.
Excellent guy.
Great guy. And his grandfather is Howard Cosell. And I didn't know this until Colin tweeted it yesterday, that Howard is not in the Pro Football Hall of
Fame. It's amazing, because they had that the Pete Rozelle Award.
Right. They have a media award.
And you would think he'd be there.
You could also make a case that he goes in as a contributor, because Monday Night Football is one of the most significant sports TV properties ever.
Mm-hmm.
And Howard Cosell is right in the reason for that being true.
You could also make a case that Howard Cosell should have a name on an award for the whole thing.
Right. And as Colin says, his grandfather was tough to deal with at times and burned bridges and whatever. But I would have bet a lot of money for me. Pete would have bet like probably 75 full cents on this.
That's right.
That he was in the Hall of Fame for years. I couldn't believe that when I saw Colin's tweet yesterday. So that's something that needs to be rectified as soon as possible. Because for whatever issues you have with Howard Cosell, there's no way to talk about the growth of football without discussing him and Gifford and Don Meredith on Monday Night Football.
And that's surprising. That's gotten past the committee that does. I don't know if the big committee does that award.
I don't think they do. I think those probably awards come from the Hall of Fame. There's got to be a committee for that too, but it's not the same selection process as the main players and coaches.
Howard Cosell, long overdue, should be there.
Yes. Now, last but not least, I think a young Howard Cosell did stats for Jody Mack when he was doing play-by-play of the original American Football Championship. But our good friend Jody Mack on the air on CBS Sports Radio this weekend and had to talk about Packers football and tried to show off saying the Packers GM's last name.
So let me ask you about roster building, because I just don't understand. I know the back and forth between Rodgers and your GM there, Gutekunst, and they just could never get on the same page. And everyone who's a Rodgers fan think Gutekunst was an idiot and terrible, and everyone who didn't like Aaron and his attitude stood up for Gutekunst. I was kind of in the middle. I thought that both of them at times made mistakes and both of them were jerks. But here's one where I can't explain Gutekunst's line of thinking.
Me neither.
I mean, whether or not he's saying it correctly.
Whoever he is.
But why does he say it four times in 7 seconds?
I think it's a defense mechanism. It's a way for him to say it, to feel like he's getting it right.
And poor Ryan B., who wasn't sure whether we could air that correctly or not, because it flirts with some pretty heinous language.
But it's in Jody's eyes, it's a name.
Yes.
And it's not like there were certain syllables left off of it.
Right. It could have been worse. It could have been very clearly the bad, bad, bad word.
Correct.
It was four times, though.
Right. And that, like, as you texted me, why did you do it four times in 3 seconds? I mean, that's the question. Like, you do that when you master a dentacumpo, then you just start saying it to, like, show off. But he's showing off, and he's got it wrong, I think.
Maybe he just wants to say it like that.
I don't know. And we still don't even know the right way to say it, because the Packers have it said one way, and the people who know him say it a different way. There is no right answer.
Brian Gutekunst.
Exactly.
Gutekunst.
But you got to, at this point, you got to go Gunty, my man. I mean, that's actually the way to do it, is you have
Gunty, my man.
You got to shorten it.
Gunty. Gunty for short.
Exactly. You got to make it your own.
Gunty, whatever. Gunty.
As awkward as it might be, but also space it out.
Brian Gutekunst.
You don't need to say that over and over and over and over and over again.
For our sake, yes.
Right, we'll keep doing it.
Mr. GM, call him.
The Packers GM.
Yeah.
Mr. GM.
Hockey has this weird nickname thing. Like, George McPhee used to be the GM in Washington, the Capitals, and they called him GM, General Manager George McPhee. Somebody else. So we could call him like GBGM. We could call him something like that, or GBGM, or GBBG, or just BG. Let's call him BG. That's easy. Done. And now we're not flirting with danger.
That's
right?
Fine with me.
Because even Gunty or Gunty is probably wrong.
I think it's definitely wrong.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites.
So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Had a story from Friday that we didn't get to that Boyle liked, and Boyle's here today, so it goes back in today's rundown. We'll see if we get there. LSU making a quick concession to bettors with how they'll handle injuries for this coming football season. We've got the Angels later this hour, still without a win since the trade deadline, adding all those pieces after not trading Shohei Ohtani. Things not going well for the Halos at the moment. And shortly this hour, we'll check in on Carson Wentz, who still wants to play football, is practicing on his own without a job, and posted a picture yesterday that for a short period of time sent social media ablaze and triggered all sorts of deserved Carson Wentz jokes. Today's poll question, by the way, is now up at CBS Sports Radio, coming off the Jody Mack clip in Soundcheck, where he rapid-fire mispronounced the Packer GM's last name, I don't know, 5 times in 7 seconds. This is unofficial. This, of course, needs DA's final approval, but we are asking you this morning, what should Brian Gutekunst's nickname be? The original Gunty, my man. My suggestion, plain old BG for his initials, obviously. And then choice number 3, Ryan Botcher.
I didn't make that.
You didn't? Pete did. Thinks it's hilarious. We'll give it to Pete, see if America responds.
I think it's hilarious. I think that's my nickname for him.
That's fine. And I would like it to be official. If DA signs off on this, if I have to reference Packers GM Ryan Botcher in updates for the rest of the football season, sign me up. Let's begin, though, with expansion. I said this at the top of the show. When we were here Friday, somewhere in the last hour, The Athletic reported, and other outlets, that there was a Pac-12 meeting coming shortly, and that talk of Oregon and Washington moving to the Big Ten had cooled off a little bit. There was renewed optimism about the Pac-12 surviving and maybe only losing Colorado this time around. That was, you know, 9:15, 9:30-ish Eastern time on Friday morning. By the time we got to dinner, my time on Friday in the East, everybody had left the Pac-12. Oregon and Washington were going to the Big Ten, and Arizona and Arizona State and Utah said, yeah, we should probably go as well, and away they all went, which leaves now just 4 teams in the Pac-12. And I guess originally there were 4 teams in the Pac-4 when Jody helped found it back in 18-whatever in Portland, Oregon. And now we're down to 4 again. Oregon State, Washington State, Cal, and Stanford. And where they go is a significant question. And one of the, and there's a lot, there are a lot of losers in this. Rivalries are broken. Change may not be renewed, may feel different moving forward. An entire conference may soon be gone. But, you know, I can't not think about the non-football and basketball players in all of these conferences at all of these schools who, yes, they're going to benefit from all of this TV money coming in. But the benefit they're not going to get from that money is time travel, is chartered planes, that when Oregon baseball has to go to Piscataway, New Jersey, they're going to fly from Eugene to Denver to Newark and then bus from Newark to Piscataway. The volleyball teams, soccer teams, track and field, swimming and diving. I can't get past that. It's not new news. It's not going to change. I wish it could. But I can't get past those kids and the inconsistency and the hypocrisy of talking about student athletes. And I'll remind you, the NCAA requires you to call them student athletes. When you're at a press conference or you're writing about them, you'll hear about it if you don't say student athletes. Our old friend, John Feinstein, because This is the kind of guy he is. Made sure to never call them student athletes so that people would yell at him and whatever. Yeah, good for him. So while they make you do those stupid things like that, they also make basketball games during March Madness come on Sunday night where these kids will never get back to campus if they have a class on Monday, and they know that and they don't care. And now they just keep allowing and signing up for all of these smaller schools, the non-revenue creating sports, to just travel and travel and travel and spend more time on planes, in airports, on buses, however, not in class. Because they've got it, because their conference foe is now literally across the country. Not a time zone, not two, now everybody. From Oregon to New Jersey. I mean, the Big Ten now is basically, you can just go in there and find a different open to this show every day. Just pick two cities and you're covering, you're crisscrossing America to explain that we're heard nationwide and north of the border because of the way they have set things up here. It just sucks. It's unfair. It's hypocritical. And it's why this has to change. And I have no hope that this will, and I understand why it's nearly impossible. But at some point, college football just needs to be its own thing. And if you need to rope in men's and women's basketball too, I get it. Right now, every TV contract includes everybody. It's about football and sometimes a little bit about basketball, but it also includes all of those Olympic sports, but it's not about them, but they're all intertwined in those deals. So this can't necessarily be easily unpacked, but if everybody's on board and no one's fighting it, it can be relatively easily unpacked because this just doesn't work. It shouldn't work like this. The Pac-12 will be different for forever, no matter what, if Oregon and Washington and Arizona, and they're playing football elsewhere. We can't fix that. But at least let everybody else still live in the Pac-12 or the Pac whatever and keep those rivalries and shorten travel time. Go back to bus rides, not plane trips. Go back to being off campus for the minimum amount of time, not the maximum, because you're going all over the place to play your games. And since football is driving all of this, from TV execs to school presidents to ADs, just make it its own thing. We're almost there now. Why not just go all in and get it all over with? Figure out who goes where. I know Chip Kelly over the weekend threw this out there, half joking, half not. But if the goal is to have basically an NFL structure on the college football front, conferences and divisions, let's just get there. Pick whatever you want, 48, 64 teams, whatever the math makes sense, however you want to line them up. You want to have eight groups of eight, whatever it is. Figure out a way to save some names. I don't know if you need to have the Big Ten and the SEC. But let's just make football exist on its own. Then it can have its own rules about transfers, NIL, this and that, and everyone else can be left alone. But at least the losers I just talked about at Oregon, Washington, wherever, where they're now being dragged across the country to play all these conference games, at least they're still in the bigger conferences with all the money. Because the next level down of losing are the athletes at Stanford and Cal and Oregon State and Washington State. And with all due respect to Washington State and Oregon State, their appeal to the big groups is almost zero. And that is what it is. Stanford and Cal should have more appeal, but they don't. What those two schools do have is a remarkable history in producing non-football and non-basketball star athletes, Olympic athletes. In fact, the last time it was counted, Stanford led the world, basically, in producing Olympians. And before you shrug and roll your eyes, you care about those sports because you watch the Olympics. The Olympics, as Pat Forty said it over the weekend at SI.com, wrote about it, I should say, Olympic TV ratings are like a Michigan-Ohio State football game every night for 15, 16, 17 nights, not a Saturday in November. For 2.5 weeks, you watch the Olympics like we watch those football games. So you care about these sports, and you care about these athletes. And Stanford, right now, shy of the Olympics, they have some of the best programs in those sports currently and historically. And those programs rely on Pac-12 money, on Power 5 conference money coming in, which is why Stanford and Cal can't go running to the Mountain West, where it would make sense geographically to play those schools. And there is some decent competition in those in that conference for their bigger sports. But I think as a Mountain West member, you get $6 million a year from their media rights deal. It's 30 right now in the Pac-12, and it'd be 23 and up had they accepted this Apple deal. You can't give back $16, $17, $20 million of budget money and keep those sports going. So if Stanford and Cal in particular don't get almost like a sympathy invite to one of these big leagues, or we don't fast forward even more and really reset the whole thing, and they're included in that, whatever that looks like, they're in real trouble and in real danger of cutting the sports that are so good that actually do apply to the whole student-athlete moniker and amateurism. Like, if that stuff means something to you, that's where it really exists. It's not in football and basketball. It is in soccer. It is in gymnastics. And all those things are in jeopardy now because greedy TV execs and schools and conference commissioners want to max out football money. And I get that, but it doesn't mean we have to ignore the downside of all of this. And there's a lot of it. And there's a lot of people who are going to be hurt by this significantly. And maybe somewhere along the way there's a solution, but I don't think so. But it's something that you're going to feel, and you're going to notice if those sports down, those schools downsize, if they do away with teams altogether, it's going to be noticeable. The list of athletes, Olympians, that have come from those two schools in particular, Stanford and Cal, is like in over 500 combined. Huge names. Katie Ledecky, Alex Morgan. And all those teams are in jeopardy now because Stanford and Cal, because they're slightly just not good enough in football, are not draws in this. Because, again, they want to be student-athletes, but the student part of this doesn't matter because Stanford and Cal are top five schools when it comes to that. But that has literally no bearing on anyone's decision to go court them and bring them into their league. And they're just sitting there flapping in the breeze, and as of, you know, next summer, there are four teams in the Pac-12, whatever they're going to call it. 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. Boy, I get why it's all happening, and we've expected it to happen all along, but it's just, and there's a lot of good in all this, too. I mean, new matchups we're going to see now. You can sign me up for some of these. Oregon, Michigan, Oregon, Ohio State. Those are going to be interesting football games. We'll get them regularly now. But, I mean, there's also a lot of crap involved in this, and weeding through it's tough sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, when you're seeing it happen day by day and you're like, oh, wow, okay. UCLA and USC last year, I guess, you know, the Pac-12 is just now they're going to be, what, after USC and UCLA announced they're going to leave, they were back down to 10 teams?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, all right, maybe they go back to the Pac-10. And then Arizona State, Arizona, Utah, Oregon, well, everybody's leaving. So it's the mass exodus. So in the moment, you think it's kind of crap, and you think it's, you know, a bunch of greedy TV execs and college presidents and chancellors. I honestly think this is going to be better for college football. I really do. This is, it's messy. It's chaotic right now. You don't know who's leaving. You don't know who's playing in what conference. Like, if I asked you to rattle off the Big 12 right now, it would probably be a little bit tough with everybody that's going there. You got four new schools this year.
Right.
Everybody that's going there next year.
That's the hard part for me, is when people are going to be there, when the expansion happens and the playoff, like all the timeline is what confuses me.
Yeah, but think of, what I go back to is think about how the Big 12 as we knew it 10 years ago versus, you know, before all these conference schools started leaving to come here in this new conference realignment chaos. We had like the first kind of conference realignment blip like 10 years ago, right? When West Virginia left, Nebraska used to be in the Big 12. Now they're in the Big 10. I forget how long ago that happened. It feels like it was like, what, 10, 15 years ago, maybe a little bit longer. But anyway,
I can't get behind the whole, oh, well, now you're ruining college rivalries because now what's the rivalry in the Big Ten? Oregon versus Ohio State?
Well, Oregon State and Washington State, those matter.
I get that in terms of geographical proximity. They're close to one another, but I don't know. I just don't think college rivalries in the world of social media now, no rivalry is as great as it used to be. And I don't think that just because, hey, Oregon State's 2 hours from us in Corvallis?
Yeah.
Or, you know, some schools that are close together, UCLA and USC, I mean, they're still in the same conference, but, like, let's say they broke into different conferences now. Hey, they're 30 minutes away from us, so we hate them. I get that. I get the history behind the rivalries, but new rivalries will form. New rivalries will form. We will move on. And, you know, the neighbor outside on your block that hangs an Oregon State flag while you hang an Oregon flag and you walk outside and you snarl at him because he went to Oregon State, like, you move on. I can't get behind the fact that college football and college athletics are ruined now because rivalries were such a big staple of it.
Well, I wouldn't use the word ruined generally. But, I mean, those rivalries matter. And it's easy for us to say, like, as New Yorkers, never actually living them and not living the college football life to begin with. But, I mean, like, Oregon State, Washington State, like, those are things.
I don't feel it. I don't feel the juice.
Shouldn't. But, like, when we've been in Boise, we've talked to people in that came from those areas to see us in Boise, and it's come up, and there's people listening in that whole corner of the country. We're like, that's the thing. Like, that's the game, and now it's gone.
Is it the game just because they're close to one another, or is it the game because they've played it hundreds of times, so it's just, it's tradition?
Well,
it's tradition, it's all of them.
I mean, yeah, that's how you get tradition. That's how you build rivalries.
We're making new traditions here. So, yeah, it sucks, I guess, right now for the next 2-3 years, but in 5, 6, 7, 8 years from now, you'll have new rivalries. In 20 years, I can't imagine we're going to have conference realignment every 3-4 years for the next 20, 30 years. At some point, things are going to settle in. You know, maybe it's when we get two major conferences with 25 teams and everybody else is on their own in independence. But you are going to get new traditions. You'll get new rivalries. 20 years from now, maybe Oregon-UCLA or Oregon-Michigan is going to be a gigantic rivalry. And, you know, we're talking about, oh, wow. You know, remember when it was Oregon-Oregon State? Now, how about this rivalry? What's better, it's best for the competition. That's the thing that is coming out of this. That's the best thing for it. Because now you're getting several of the best teams all in one conference playing each other. And as they move to a 12-team college football playoff, yeah, maybe you still only think that 4 or 5 or 6 college football teams can actually win a national championship. But now that you're going to get several of the best teams in the country playing each other during the regular season, you know, maybe if Alabama slips up like they did twice last year, you know, they're the 8 seed or they're the 9 seed, but you still think that Alabama can win a national championship. So it gives you the sense that, okay, one loss doesn't ruin a team's season now as they move towards a 12-team college football playoff, and you're going to have several blockbuster matchups throughout the year rather than some of these teams playing cupcake, you know, Division I AA teams in week 1 and week 11.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably still going to get that just as, like, especially
you'll probably get
early.
At least one, but yeah. Hopefully you don't get 2 or 3.
But, I mean, it's just, you know, the Oregon-Oregon State game is called the Civil War, right? I mean, like, that's just horror. And Oregon said over the weekend when they announced that they were leaving that they intend to play Oregon State in everything, including football. But I don't even know if that's going to be physically possible, however things end up where Oregon State ends up and what the Big Ten schedule structure is going to be, what's left. And if football schedules are made ridiculously far forward, so I don't even know where the hole in Oregon's schedule is to put Oregon State football on there. Like, people are going to feel those things missing. I'm not going to sit here and dismiss the significance of college tradition. I've talked to too many people who care too much about that game more than the rest of the entire season. So you can't just throw it away. But that's what a lot of these decisions are actually doing, is throwing away these games that are not going to exist every year. They're not going to exist inside a conference. They're going to be a non-conference game. They might be at a different time of year. Like, those are significant losses for people.
Now, maybe this is because the Pac-12, production value when those games are played is so terrible because they didn't care about them and didn't spend any money in them, you know,
dialing up those games. Maybe that's why I didn't get any juice when I would watch Oregon, Oregon State on TV. And like, I don't really feel it. I don't really feel the big rivalry here. I mean, what do they even play for? Tell me what Oregon, Oregon State plays. Do they play for the platypus?
The trophy. Is it? One of them is, the trophies are always weird. I mean, there's an axe in the Big Ten. There's a rose bush somewhere. But even like, you know, I when I was in school, I had to follow Patriot League football. Lehigh Lafayette is the most played rivalry in college football history. You wouldn't care about it, but they played at a Yankee Stadium when it was the 100th anniversary, and people showed up, and people give a you-know-what about it in that part of Pennsylvania because it's just tradition. And if something happened that one of those schools left the Patriot League and they didn't play it anymore, it wouldn't matter to people, and they'd hate the side that was breaking it up. That's the stuff to me that...
I'm not saying rivalries count for nothing. I'm just saying it's not like they're the end-all, be-all. I think the only thing that people say they care about rivalries is because it's tradition. It's tradition and just because they're next to you rather than there actually being any kind of rivalry. I think rivalries are dying all across sports. I mean, look at baseball. Yankees-Red Sox means nothing anymore. And they've largely been competitive. Even though they haven't been in a World Series, either team, in a couple of years, the Red Sox, what, won their last World Series 2016?
Yeah, I still think,
the rivalry's
though,
been dead.
The rivalry's dead because the Red Sox haven't been good.
Does UNC Duke feel like a huge rivalry to you anymore?
In college basketball?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not to me.
Yeah, and I think the Iron Bowl still matters. I think all those things matter.
I don't think they matter. At least, I don't know, maybe I just don't feel things anymore. Maybe I'm losing just emotions. Numb.
Rivalries change for me. So I think, like, over the last couple of years, like you said, the Yankees don't play the Red Sox. I feel like the Yankees-Blue Jays is more of a rivalry now than the Red Sox.
Yeah, and I think also it's not the best comparison pro to college because the dynamic is different. I mean, you know, they're playing 14 times, used to be 19 times a year. It's hard to get geeked up for every single one of those matches. When you've had Yankees-Red Sox in the ALCS sometime soon, we're right back in the hate. We're right back in bloody socks and Bucky Dent and all that kind of stuff.
I don't know. Even the Coach K, the Final Four game between Duke and UNC was overshadowed by Coach K's retirement.
Yeah, but that took arguably the greatest coach of all time retiring to change the dynamic a little bit of that game. If he was still coaching and it was still Duke, North Carolina for the first time ever in the Final Four, that's hot. Sign me up for that.
That's hot.
Yeah. I mean, I saw Duke North Carolina play in Brooklyn at the Barclays Center, and that place was on fire. And that game meant almost nothing because it was in the tourney, and they were both getting in, and that game had a lot of heat in it. Yeah, I think we're missing this one. I think it's hard for us to understand it because we don't have one. We don't, when you grow up in New York and New Jersey, you don't have a rivalry in college sports to really connect to. And it just changes your entire view of the situation. I don't think we can comprehend, because we don't have our own, how significant those games are. Because the things that you dismiss it is why it's important, because it actually is your neighbor. It's the guy next door. And sometimes the schools too are like, there's a dynamic where, hey, I'm better than you because I got into this school. You couldn't get in. You went to the other school. And now we're going to, but then the little guy from the worst school academically, maybe they're the ones that win the basketball game or the football game. And that's where you get your revenge. Those things you can't duplicate with now, at face value, a good Oregon-Michigan football game. But Michigan can't ever be Oregon State to Oregon. That's just impossible.
Well, now Oregon can hate Washington even more than they do now, because now they're going to be the closest neighbors in the Big Ten, and they're states that neighbor each other. So there you go. There's a new rivalry. And Oregon destroyed Oregon State basically every year out of the last two out of three, I think, Oregon State won. But before that, it was like eight straight years, so... How much of a rivalry is it if they kick your ass every single year?
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Let's get stunned.
Yeah.
It doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
Okay, so Bogish being the handsome gentleman that he is, and an alpha dolphin, right? If you ever were to be a dolphin, you'd be an alpha one.
Alpha dolphin, beta human, yes.
There you go. That's on your tombstone. Sent me this one.
Brooke just nodded yes. I don't know how to take that.
Brooke nodded yes?
She did. Well, she knows what beta means because she's young,
Brooke,
like you.
Is Brooke nodding? I can't see what she's doing, but Brooke, nod if you're nodding at Bogus being a beta human, or nod if you're nodding at Bogus being an alpha dolphin.
Neither. She's confused.
Okay.
It's fine.
All right, Brooke, thanks for coming.
Neither. Neither. Different nod.
So anyway, a 400-pound black bear known as Hank the Tank was captured on Friday with her 3 cubs by California wildlife authorities. So why are wildlife capturing Hank the Tank, you may ask?
Who's a female bear,
yes,
correct?
Yes, is she the infamous cocaine bear? Did she gobble up some poor little bunny rabbit? And yes, she is a female, even though her name is Hank.
It's rude.
We'll get to that in a second. No, Hank the Tank is apparently responsible for at least 21 home break-ins, officials said. And she is being shot and skinned for her fur later this week.
What is she being?
No, I'm kidding.
She'll be a rug in my lodge.
They're transporting her to an animal sanctuary in Colorado.
Hiring her as a tape pop.
That's Pete's next hire.
She's applying for Sean's job.
No, so they transported her to an animal sanctuary in Colorado. I mean, they did tranquilize her, but this is an uplifting stun to a news, not the Silence of the Lambs breakdown we got from Emmanuel. On Friday.
Hello, Clarice.
So these break-ins were going down in the South Lake Tahoe area. So how did they know Sweet Hank was the one breaking in these homes?
Paul Prince.
They do and they don't. Apparently, they traced the bear DNA from these home break-ins back to her. But hold on.
Hold on.
Hank is actually one of 3 bears responsible for the rummaging and ransacking incidents that took place mostly last year.
But Hank's taking the full rap?
Yeah, so get this. So Jordan Traverso, one of the spokespeople for the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, said, I guess they all technically are Hank the Tank. I mean, that's the most stunned-to-a-news part of the story right there.
She needs a better lawyer.
That sweet poor female bear is taking the fall by herself for the other two.
What?
I don't like this. I don't like the sexist name. I don't like the fact that one bear is taking the heat for all 3 of them. This can't go down like this.
I hope those other 2 bears rip that community apart.
I think we should all be alpha humans now and go, one bear gets in trouble or no? I mean, all of them get in trouble or none of them get in trouble?
So
can't be like this.
And also, they captured her 3 cubs, and they're hoping to rehabilitate them by sending them to Sonoma County Wildlife Rescue. So they're ripping her cubs from her.
And rehabilitate them away from being criminals? What are they? They're going to a bear prison? What does that even mean?
Well, I guess they're putting them in a wildlife rescue, and they're just, you know, I guess rehabilitating, meaning, hey, we took your mom from you, but hopefully you turn into normal bears and not ones that at the first sign of trying to exit and destroy and kill people, you'll do that.
Not exactly gentle, Ben.
No, this story's a mess.
Anyway, there was somewhere in the article mentioned one of the guys for one of the rescues or sanctuaries said he estimates anywhere from 300 to 1,000 bears are euthanized a year. So luckily, Hank the Tank, or Henrietta the Tank, as some are starting to call her, because God forbid we can't have a female bear with a male bear name, she survived that. She did not get shot and skinned for her fur.
Well, I will strongly, for the second time, disagree with you. She can't be named Hank. It just doesn't work. Is there a female name that rhymes with the tank? I can't think of it off the top of my head.
Joni.
But no, no. We could have called her Joni, Aunt Joni.
Joni the Pony.
Joni the Pony would have worked.
Test the tank.
But Hank the Tank has to be for a male bear. I mean, there are rules here. So I think that's disrespectful to this lady to begin with.
I think it's disrespectful. They're lumping three bears into one.
That too. I'm glad they're not actually being killed and skinned for your winter log cabin fireside chats with lady friends, setting the mood.
But these bears, they were ripping off screen doors and parts of garage doors, rummaging through garbage, scratching cars, and one ripped off the siding of one house in a possible attempt to enter the house.
Wow, like the Kool-Aid man? They're just running through walls now?
and we'll go, no, we don't have an extra strap again in 2023!
I mean, look, you get what you get for living, wanting to live on Lake Tahoe. You're in the woods, you're in the wildlife, expect some bears.
Yeah, I mean, is there not, I'm not up to bear protection technology. Is there not like some kind of electrical fence type thing you can put up? Like something that just keeps them away from your property safely, aside from moving them and therefore having to run the risk of them pulling your siding off your house?
I guess, but I would say an electrical fence probably runs you a couple grand.
All right.
Put some honey like by right. a river.
Down away. River?
Yeah, go down for honey, salmon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Find the neighbor you hate and bury salmon in his backyard and make that the place for the bears.
100%.
There you go. Oregon and Oregon State rivals and neighbors can do that to each other.
Poor Hank the Tank and her two accomplices. I mean, I'm not condoning breaking and entering, but we've got to handle this better if we're the Lake Tahoe officials.
Yeah. And ripping the cubs from her. You can't put them in the same one.
Right, she's just a bear being a bear. She shouldn't be punished at all for. You've got to move them, relocate them. Okay, fine. I get that.
But never ends!
Don't take our kids away.
That's what we do as humans. Do what we want.
Break up rivalries, break up bear families. Everyone's a possible victim.
No one knows what analytics is. They think it's like a bunch of nerds doing math, which I don't know, maybe that's what it is.
It's time now for the Mothership's Advanced Analytics.
Finishing things off on this Monday with more than you need to know about Packers GM Brian Gutekunst. He played two seasons of college football, Wisconsin lacrosse. A shoulder injury ended his career. He first worked with the Packers scouting department as an intern in 97. Two of his four children are golf players. He has a degree in sports management. Our Ryan Botcher has severe color blindness. Let's pick up from there.
There's a lot of colors I can't see correctly.
What's the color of that Army Navy helmet?
I don't even know.
Well, so you can't see things?
Like that on the back screen?
Yeah.
I can't tell you if that's blue or purple.
But so like do you see?
It looks, everything looks the same. Like, not everything, but there's certain colors that look the exact same.
Just no differentiation.
Yeah, so like blue, purple, like maroon and brown, orange.
Do you have the red and green thing?
Sometimes. Depends on the shade.
So was that one football game insane for you that everybody talked about? Was that a Bills-Jets game?
Yeah, it messed with me a little bit, but the numbers were different, I think, so I was fine.
Wow. Do you remember when you figured this out? When were you diagnosed?
I was like... first grade, second grade, they're like, you know, like the find the pathway.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'd had to do that, and I was going the complete wrong direction. And I'm like, okay, let's stop. And they took me to a professional.
And yet you dress yourself so well.
Well, like, it's not hard to dress with black.
No, but colors match. You need to match colors. And you don't want to show off in random combinations.
Different band shirt every day.
It's not the yellow and green shoes.
Marco Belletti collection.
Right. By the way, despite my last second vote, calling Brian Gutekunst Ryan Botcher is not going to work.
Ah, come on.
We've had nearly 40 votes, and it's running last.
Come on, not even 40 votes?
Yeah.
Pete really thought that I was going to win.
Ah.
So it appears that Gunty, my man, is going to win and keep its title.
Yeah, it's a good one.
All right.
Yeah. Shocking. I'm surprised BG is second. I guess not everyone found the joke the same way, Pete, of Brian Botcher. I
mean, yeah, the 37,000 followers on CBS Sports Radio Twitter.
Right.
Maybe not all 37,000 are familiar with Botch yet.
Yeah. How about watch Letterman? That's a Letterman skit right there.
Time for the epic fail?
Yes, it is.
Let's do the epic fail. Jody Mack? Did you tell me what it is?
Got to be Jody Mack.
No, it was Boyle's beef with...
Anjoni.
Anjoni made it.
Sorry, Anjoni. Here's your epic fail.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
We got some tweets during the break. Skipper Tim, the Civil War is one of the oldest in the nation for rivalries. It's huge for us. Oregon, Oregon State, 45 minutes apart. Families divided here. It's like if the Yankees and Red Sox never played again.
Give me a break. Families divided.
Yeah.
Families divided.
Shut up, Grandma!
Yeah.
What a joke.
That's pretty pathetic.
Thank you, Pete. I mean, thank you. You're telling me you can't get along with somebody in your family?
No, no, no.
Because they went to Oregon State and you went to Oregon?
I don't think...
Maybe it's because Aunt Joni is a... and maybe that's why you can't get along with her.
I don't think the problem is 365 days a year. I think he means when the game comes around, no one's family anymore.
Well, yeah.
It's Ducks versus Beavers. I'm assuming they still have Thanksgiving dinner together.
Food is family.
And Joni be damned.
Well, yeah. Well, what are you going to do? Oh, Oregon State scored. Okay, that's good for you guys. No, I mean, that's maybe I'm underestimating other people's fandom just in general. You root for your team, and if you're playing the team that you don't like, your rival... Your never-ending rival will never be able to live without the Civil War playing for the Platypus Trophy anymore. That when Aunt Joni comes over and she's an Oregon State fan, you're not going to be Aunt. You're not going to, you know, put your game face on.
Like, I'm assuming Skipper Tim will go to Aunt Joni's funeral when the good Lord takes her from us.
I've fallen and I can't get up.
Maybe he'll put an Oregon sticker on her tombstone.
As he should. Leave a little stuffed duck mascot in there. One last parting shot.
I'm really angry on that one.
Yeah. But he's not going to put a Wolverine trinket in there to get Aunt Joni one more time now.
If she survives another 20 years and they have some pretty classic games, then yes, that'll be a good rivalry.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
Tough day for Aunt Joni, tough day for Boyle, depending on which side of the argument you come on. But more than one person had to ask us outside here in our newsroom if Aunt Joni was a real person. She's not, I think, safely. Just a creation from Boyle's twisted mind.
I do not have it. You know where I got it from? Can you guess?
I cannot.
I got it from that commercial with all the ants. Where it's like, you have ants, and then the one woman, the bones open in the fridge, expired.
Yes.
Expired. Expired.
That's a lot of house.
And then at the end, it's just the little portly redheaded one. She goes, Aunt Joni's here. That's what I picture when I picture people talking about families divided.
Are those Geico commercials? Those are good commercials.
Yes.
Those are good ones.
They always have winners.
The one with the rock band in the basement?
Yeah, they always seem to hit the nail on the head.
And now they've given us Aunt Joni.
Expired.
I want to thank today's guest, Tyson Alger, for joining us to walk us through the Oregon perspective of realignment from the Big Ten or to the Big Ten from the Pac-12. Tomorrow, Toby Rowland, voice of the Oklahoma Sooners. He's your sounds of Saturday, plus more on U.S. women's soccer and whatever else happens this afternoon as well. Don't forget, DA's got you on the Jim Rome Show, noon Eastern on some of these same stations and most significantly on CBS Sports Network. For Pete... For Botcher, for Brooke, for Boyle, I'm Andrew. Have a great Monday. We'll see you again tomorrow. For now, the mothership disconnects.
Quack, 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 quack.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.